Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read most of when I read it. And today joining me is my girlfriend Juliana. Say hello.
Hello everyone.
And what's the book that we're going to be reviewing today?
We're going to review the book A Closed and Common Orbit by Becky Chambers.
And you bought this one and you started reading. You got it on iBooks. And,
yes, I did.
And because you got it on iBooks, there's this thing called family purchases. And because, you know, I can just look at your purchases and go, I'll check that out as well. Having myself read the first book in this, what we call it, a series, you know, it seems to be like, it seems to be setting up a world where books could be told in.
It is also, on Goodreads, it's called The Wayfarer 1 and 2.
Yes.
So it is obviously part of this universe, storyline, however you want to call it.
And that first book was called A Long Way to a Small and Angry Planet, or was it?
Yes.
Is that correct? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, let me go across here, and this is a good thing to do, is check it out on Goodreads. Yes, it goes... The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet introduces the readers to the incredible world of Rosemary Harper, a young woman with a restless soul and secrets to keep. And so that actually is kind of more information that you get going into this book. Because this is the thing... Yeah, because this is the thing that I did. Normally, I'm not a big fan of reading blurbs. But when you get to the second book, sometimes it's interesting to go, okay, yeah, what happened... In the first book, for example, I'm somehow managed to get start reading. I'm reading 5 different science fiction / fantasy books
currently?
At the moment. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Like I just started another audiobook, and I was like, no, I've already got 2 audiobooks on the go and 2 ebooks that I should get around to finishing some of them. But just before I started the follow up to the Oryx and Crake by Margaret Atwood,
oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember the characters and I remember kind of what happened, but let's just make sure. So all I did was just read the blurb for the first book, and
all
I was
right.
like, oh, okay, I remember, you know, who the 3 main characters are in the first book. So when they turn up in the second book, it's clear in my head
who is who,
like which names go with which parts of the story.
Yes.
And it's quite clear that at the end of that book it's a post-apocalyptic, but some other humans turn up, and then in this book I was like, oh, right, we're going back to before the apocalypse, so we're probably going to meet those humans. You know, this is going to be the story of those other humans who survived the apocalypse. You know,
yeah.
Even if it isn't, you know, I'm over halfway through. It seems like that is what's happening, you know. But it's just one of the things that you kind of just got a framework in your mind of like what, like who these characters are. I started this book, A Closed and Common Orbit. And normally when you start reading a sequel, like there's this thing where you go, well, how much do they need to put in the start of the book to say, okay, this character, as you remember, or, you know, they talk
you
have
mean
to
the info dump.
Yeah, well, it's not the info dump, but it's kind of the catch the readers up. It's sort of like, look, you probably read the previous book a year ago when it came out, and now it's a year later. And so the characters have conversations with each other, like, you know, they're kind of like, as you know, beforehand, when we got off this spaceship, this is this, and now we're going to go and see this. Ah, yes. And, or it'll just be like the narrator, or like whoever the voice, the authorial voice is just going, this person did this and this. And sometimes I've commented on a bit like, oh, it's a bit annoying. Don't need to put that in. I've just read the previous book, or if it was a good enough previous book, I remember the characters, I remember what they all wanted.
Yeah, what? But you do that when you immediately read the next book. So, like,
yes.
For me, I read the long way to a small angry planet. Just last year, like, I mean, when did I read it?
Well, yeah, it was like in the summer last year.
But
it was
something that made a big impression on me, so I just remembered as being very good, and the characters, I really enjoyed the characters. So
yeah.
I didn't really need so much to know exactly about what happened and stuff.
But the problem with me is that I kind of did remember there was a name, and I was like, oh yeah, Lovelace. Oh yeah, she's got like, she's, you know, spoilers for maybe the previous book a little bit, but you know, it's even said in that book there, they're looking for a robot body to put a ship's mind in so she can interact with humans on a human level or something like
yep.
that. And this book starts with Lovelace in a body, but then there's another character called Pepper, and I was like, I don't remember Pepper from the first book, and it turns out, yeah, as I read onto it, oh, the Pepper was one of the small side characters that they visited on their long journey. You know, they stop off on many different planets. That
right.
was one of the planets that
in
they stopped
Port
off on.
Coriol,
yeah, Port Coriol and things like yeah. that. So I was like, oh, but I was thinking, why isn't Lovelace with the crew of the Wayfarer? Why is this story like happening sideways? Like, why isn't she hanging out with them? And it was about a quarter of the way through the book when it kind of slowly dawned on me. I was like, I remember now, and I don't need to go into it now because it's like it's just a spoiler for the previous book and there's no need to go into it, but it's one of those things that like just an extra sentence near the beginning of this book would have kind of set me up and be like, ah, okay, I now remember why Lovelace isn't here. And they're like, oh, you should, Lovelace, you should get yourself another name because that's like the name of a brand name of a ship computer, you know, and you're not, and you're not, ship computers or like AIs aren't allowed to have human bodies. So, you know, you have to pass as a human. So it's maybe like change your name. She's like, oh, I'll change my name. So I was like, but then it's like not even the same character as before. And then of course, as it slowly comes out, it's like, oh yeah, no, it isn't the same character. So yeah, this is a standalone novel, but the history of the character, if you've not read that previous novel, wouldn't make sense. Or if, like me, if the ending of that previous novel hadn't lodged itself so securely in your mind that you just remember what's going on. And I didn't. And it was like a quarter of the way into the book where I was like, oh, right. Anyway, so it's a difficult balance to strike, though.
Yeah, but would you say it is? You could read it as a standalone novel without having any, like, not even touch the
other book? I don't think so. No, because there's so much, like, the world, like you said in the previous book, you like the aliens and you like the different planets that they visit and you like the setup and you like, oh, okay, AIs can be like this and aliens like that and there's different interactions between them and the whole galactic, you know, the politics of the galactic political sphere is all set up, and it wouldn't make sense. So it's like, oh, it's a standalone novel. I think it's a standalone novel within this universe. In like say a Star Trek novel, you know, it doesn't, oh, this Star Trek novel comes after this TV episode and comes before that TV episode, or in this sequence of books, it's like, no, it's just a Star Trek novel. You know the characters, you know the world. There's going to be transporters. They're going to go to warp drive and all those things that you kind of wouldn't get if they're just kind of just kind of thrown away things. So, but like I say, it's a difficult balance.
But on the other hand, it is not really a sequel, is it?
It's set immediately after the stuff that happens in that first book, literally.
But normally, you know, a sequel is normally you get to know the people who are like a big part in the other book, and then the sequel is how their story continued.
No, it's not.
In this one, it's actually, I mean, it is taken one fraction of the whole first story and puts like a zoom onto that.
Yeah, it's like, remember these three characters? This is their story. And I'm like, no, I don't remember those three characters. Tell me who they are again. It's like, and it says, as we go through the book, it's like, oh, right, okay, now I remember who they were. But it could have just been like three lines when they're talking about, what is it Pepper and Blue? No, what's
Blue, Blue. Pepper and Blue.
They could have just said, Pepper and Blue, who Lovelace met because they were the friends that they met along the way, on the long way. And I'd have been like, right, that's the people. But it was like, I was like, who? Like, but it was pages and pages and pages until I connected them back. Because Pepper and Blue, in that first book, sure, they were fine characters, but they were only in it for like, a chapter and a half
but
or something.
I didn't immediately totally remember what was going on. And that didn't affect me so much.
No.
It wasn't, I mean, I think you were more affected by that.
But this is the thing that I've complained about in other books where they've been too heavy-handed and they spent like the first two chapters just going over what happened in the previous two books or the end of the previous book. And I'm like, I know what happened because that previous book was good, but it's this difficult thing that when the previous book is good and memorable, I don't need it to go back over.
So meaning you want like a good balance between too much and too little.
But this is too little. This is clearly too little. And other books I've complained that have been too much. But like who is going to be reading this book? But if this is like for fans, and it feels like it's a book which is for fans of the first book who read that book in preparation for this book to come out. It felt like that. You just go straight into it.
I did this. I read the first book. And and then they said, oh, the next book will be published in end of 2016. And so I thought, oh, that's good. I already had it in my pre-order thing on iBooks, so I got a notification.
So as soon as it came out, you just straight into it. So it's like really recent, is it? It's just come out recently.
Yeah, it's like from November.
So it reminds me actually, because why were we looking? Oh, because there was another podcast that I started listening to called Do by Friday, and one of it's a weekly challenge though. So the three of them set challenges for each other, and one of the challenges was watch this episode of Voyager, and I've never seen any Voyager before. I don't think I've ever seen a full episode of Voyager. But the guy who, one of the guys on it, has written these guides to how to get into watching Star Trek. He wrote a guide for, like how to get into watching Next Generation and how to get into watching Deep Space Nine. I was once told, hey, Deep Space Nine is the best series. It's like a long-running story. What you should do is just get straight into it. Just put on episode one and start watching and just go through. And it was weird because I've never seen any Star Trek TV shows before, like except for like isolated episodes here and there. Like, yeah. Or, you know, when it came on TV. Because in the time when Next Generation was really big, we never had a TV in the home. It was something that was sort of like some friends of mine were into Star Trek. So once I saw half an episode when I was around their house and I turned around their house in 1994 or whenever it was, you know, and I've seen some of the movies, but that's kind of my level of interaction with Star Trek. And so, like, it started off and it was just like, of course, everybody watching Deep Space Nine at the time was already a fan of Next Generation and this was the next series. So when it starts off, Picard was there for a bit and there's some stuff going on. But then it was weird because they were just like, right, now let's get the new team together. Who's the new team? Well, this actor just walks in and it's sort of like this parade of actors just walking in. And if you know, the blue costume is the medic and the red costume is the engineer and the green costume is the environment officer. I don't even know what that. I mean, I may have got them wrong. In fact, I probably have got some of those wrong. But like, oh no, red shirts are the ones who die. Yeah, like security or whatever. But you know, they just walked in, and for people who knew Star Trek enough already, or fans of it already, just those people walking in is enough to just go, oh right, I know where I am, now get into it. But for me, like, again, it took me a few episodes to go, what's going, like, where, why are they, who are these people? And I was thinking, but aren't the Klingons the bad, like, but then who are these guys? You know, like, I just didn't have enough ways into it. And that's the same kind of experience that I had reading A Closed and Common Orbit, when it just goes, right, these people are going down to this planet. And I was like, oh, who are their people? What planet was that again? Who are they? You know, and I just felt, oh, I'm suddenly out of my depth. And it just took me too long to pick it up. Again, part of that is probably my failing, not remembering what came in the previous book. But, and I remembered most of what happened in the previous book. It was just like this one character detail. So I'm like, why is Lovelace leaving the ship again? And I didn't remember that key part. Whereas a lot of the other people in that book, I do remember. Like some of the other bigger characters, the bigger events, the journey that they went on, the things that happened. All of those things I remember, except this one key little fact, which was like, why is Lovelace leaving the ship?
You could have just read the end of the previous novel.
Well, no, I mean, it wasn't on my iPad or whatever. So anyway.
But I want to say, I started this book before Luke. Yeah. So I got it and started reading it. And then you got interested because, well, you read the previous one.
Yeah,
and
I thought,
I read
why
it
not?
And then, yeah. So I was like about halfway in or something. And then Luke started. And that was kind of annoying, you know, like Luke reads a book and then he says immediately, there's a mistake in the first sentence. I said, what? I don't care.
You didn't see the mistake.
I didn't see the mistake. I didn't care. Because also I'm not reading word by word, sentence by sentence.
I can't not.
And then immediately when he mentioned things like that, I start seeing mistakes. I don't want this. I don't want this. So I don't know. Next time I will just finish it and then you read it or something.
Yeah, okay. But this is a great, I mean, there is a little bit before, but it's like part one, chapter one. There's like a little bit of blurb beforehand. You know, when you've got a memetic AI housing or something like that. When you've got your robot body, look out for these kind of things. But the book you're just to get into this, normally a first line of a novel can be like a great experience. Like there's some, back from my history of reading for this podcast, there's some which really stand out to me. You know, I can't remember what it was, but there was one which just goes...
I thought they were standing out.
Yeah, no, but I can't remember. The thing is, the opening line is more memorable to me than the title of the book or even the author of the book, like, because the opening line was like, he stood up and made the announcement in the soon penises and vaginas will be just a preference that you tick on a box or something like that.
All right, what book is this?
I don't know, but it's one where one of the characters has a sex change halfway through. So the first half of the book is written from a he, and then the second half of the book is like, she did this, she did... And it's one of those things that the first line of the book sets all that up. You just today finished reading Neuromancer, which has got a very famous opening line.
Oh, does it?
Which, yeah.
Is it famous?
Yeah, well, it's famous because it's... it says, "Oh, the sky above Nagoya was the color of a TV channel tuned to a dead Dead station or something like that.
Okay, well, I read it in German, so of course it's not that sentence.
Yes, it's not that sentence, but that is a sentence. But that's in such German. that is so famous that that is even referenced in other books. There was another book that I read which said, and the TV channel looked like the color of the sky above a Japanese harbor or whatever the line
around.
Is.
The sky looked like
the point is
dead channel of a TV.
Only the science fiction fans reading that book. Mm. Those science fiction fans would get the reference and go, ah, that's actually a really fun Neuromancer reference. But you would only get it if you know that you're looking for those kind of things. I was actually once on a trivia podcast, and one of the categories, because I knew I was science fiction, I was on it because I did the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, and they were like, okay, here we go. Your category is opening lines of novels, and they said five novels, and I was like, yep, that one's from The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. That one is from, Day of the Triffids, you know. Yeah. There's some things. When you wake up on a Wednesday and it sounds like a Sunday, you know something is wrong. Or 1984, like the clock struck 13. You know, these opening lines can be so great and can set up an expectation for the book. You go, oh, clock striking 13. Or like, oh, you wake up on a Wednesday or Tuesday and it feels like a Sunday. And you're like, okay, tell me. And you just go straight into it.
Also, I think we didn't read The Martian. We listened to it as an audiobook, so I don't have the sentence right in my head, but I remember the first lines in that one being quite like...
Yeah, it's sort of like, oh fuck. it even says, oh shit. There's even swearing in the first line. You're like, okay, this is a book about a funny guy who swears a lot in technical situations on Mars. And you're like, that's it. So here's the first line here.
But maybe this is just in the e-book. Let's say we got the e-book version, so it might be...
I know, but you'd think that if you're going to do an editing pass over a book, just of all those great opening lines I'm talking about, what would be, like, it's the opening, like, Lovelace had been in the body for 28 minutes, and it still felt bit as wrong as it had the second she woke up inside it, which is always, like, even if that was a correctly done, so, but it's sort of like, it still felt just, I don't know, every bit, so it's still felt every bit as wrong is what it should be. So the word every is just missing from the sentence, and I read that, and I just turned to you and Ben and was like, there's a word missing from this sentence.
And immediately you made this book a bit foul for me.
Yeah, because you hadn't noticed. And that was like the main writing error that I saw. Because normally, like, there isn't, like, some of the writing is a bit clumsy. Like, she existed in a webs with eyes both within and outside. And it's sort of like, it's either eyes both inside and outside, or within or without. But in some cases, you just go, okay, that's just a different word choice. It's not like literally you missed the word out of this sentence and the editor didn't pick up on it.
And there was this other thing, which is quite unfortunate, because I obviously don't have this marked on my iBook anymore for some reasons. But it was something like that she was making a remark about being... Under the sea in a place where it's totally the opposite from being in space, where in under the sea you kind of get like crushed inwards or something.
Oh yeah. I actually had inward. This one. Oh no, here's another one. You've got a human body and a non-human name is going to beg questions, and I'm like, okay, it's not going to beg questions, it's going to raise questions, but the beg questions and begging questions and raising questions, that's kind of passed into normal stuff.
Yeah, here's the sentence. Travelling under the seas between...
Breaking apart in space. Oh, yeah.
What? Travelling under the seas between was not a possibility she'd considered. Breaking apart in space was somehow much less frightening than being crushed inward.
And you read that sentence to me and you're like, oh, that's a fun sentence. And I was like... Yeah. Being crushed inward, and I was like, but it really confused me because you didn't read the bit about being under the sea.
Yeah.
Breaking apart in space was somehow much less frightening than being crushed inward. And I was like, crushed inward? And I was like, how can you be crushed which isn't being crushed inward? Is there another direction that you can be crushed which isn't inward? Can you be crushed outward? I mean, I guess you could be crushed sideways, but like, but still, if you crush sideways, you're still being pressed in. Anyway, no, so.
But this is with this sentence, I kind of dug my own grave, because from then on, like, everything was kind of like, oh, I showed him that sentence, and then you pointed out that first sentence, and I thought, oh my god,
but that's only in the second chapter anyway. So I didn't really want to bring up too many of those kind of things. Okay, so there was this one issue that I have. So half of the action takes place on the Coriol's dark side, which is a moon. Okay,
yeah.
And let me just see if I can go to this one. So it says here, I mean, maybe I'm just misunderstanding it. Sidra preferred Coriolis' dark side. It was a curious astronomical phenomenon, I can't even say it. A planet tidally locked with the sun, a moon tidally locked with its planet, each with the day and night that never shifted across their respective surfaces. And so I was thinking, how can, like, I was just like, so how is it, I was like, okay, this is tidally locked, but it doesn't then say what position those are in. Because then if it has a dark side, it must mean that the moon isn't between the planet and the sun. Because if it had a dark side, it would just, you'd just be seeing the planet all the time, and that would be reflecting light back onto the planet. So it was just one of those things that I'm like, I can understand how this could work, but it would have, which of the, then it could, if they were in tidally locked orbits,
I thought the planet is the sun, and they are locked, like, to the sun and go around, like...
Yes, but the thing is, it's just sort of like, oh, a planet tidally locked with its sun, and a moon tidally locked with its planet, and then just moves on with the thing. But there's a dark side, and I'm like, I don't it was one of those kind of things where I was just like, it wasn't a clear enough picture for me to astronomically work out what the alignment of these planets were. Sort of like, are they at Lagrange points? Like, is it at L1 or is it L2? Because if it's on the far side of the planet, it would be in constant darkness, because it would always be, the planet would always be between the sun, so there would be a bright side, but actually the side this way, though, it would be completely in shadow. And if it was on this side, the dark side of Corey will always be able to see the planet, but that's not mentioned either. So it's one of those kind of like interesting science fiction setups. Oh, a planet, it's interesting, it's a curious astronomical phenomenon, and it's explained in the next third of the sentence, and then for the rest of the book that I read, the rest of the book that I got through, it's never mentioned again. It's just sort of like, oh, they're on the dark side. And I was like, but how does that, like, where is the planet? Like, if this is the moon of a planet and there's a sun, like, where is the planet in this? Like, where is the planet in the sky?
Well, in between. Anyway. No.
But in between what and what? Like, what is the... Anyway.
Well, for me, that is kind of like...
You just go like that. Yeah. But for me, in the beginning of a book, I'm like, right, okay, this is setting up a world here.
Well,
like,
I'm sure this is definitely not for the hard science fiction...
No, it isn't. So, anyway, that's what I noticed, and I stopped reading it halfway through. We've gone on 20 minutes about now, just literally about the opening line and the setting up of the planet.
And I haven't even said anything, like, positive about it yet.
Well, okay. Anyway. Let's do some positive... Oh, let me just say the last, because I said there's just four things I want to say. The last thing, and then you can close out the podcast with all positive stuff that you enjoyed about this book. Is that okay? So if you poke your tongue at me, people on the podcast can't hear. Maybe they can't hear us anyway, because we're testing out my new laptop, just talking straight into it, no microphones attached and things. We'll see how that works. Anyway, so the reason that there's these last two things that I want to mention is, first of all, short chapter lengths. And the way that this story is told, you get the main character, or Lovelace's, or Sidra, or whatever her name becomes when she picks a new name. There's like alternate chapters of hers, and then Pepper's backstory showing about what she was like when she was 10 years old, and then, you know, where she was and how she escaped from that planet or whatever was going on there. And as we were switching backwards between these very short chapters, it got to the point where each chapter was only 2.5 to 3.5 pages long. And it felt like neither side were novel-worthy stories. And each time I was getting into it, I was like, oh, okay, right, this is where it is. And then it would just be like, oh, and skipped over. It felt like Becky Chambers, there was a story happening in between. She was just like, oh, I don't want to bother writing that story in between, so I'll just give these little vignettes of the life and then skip forward a few days and give another vignette and skip forward, and the time in between isn't. But then at other points, it was like one chapter would end and then it would go across to another chapter, like the opposite chapter, and you'd read that and then go back and it would pick up immediately what happened. So it was like a cliffhanger, and it's like, okay, this happens, let's go across here for another 5 pages, and then back, and straight away happened. So I didn't see how these stories, they didn't fit together well enough, and they just kept interrupting each other. I'd have rather have just read Sidra's story and just read those chapters one after the other, and it would have been a fine, like the story would have flowed, or just... Jane 26's story, the young Pepper's story, as she goes through it, and that would have been a fine story if quite simple. It would have felt like just a very short novella or short story length story, just reading through that. So yeah, it was just that. And then there was an idiot plot where I was just like, no, don't, why are you even thinking about this? And there was lots of people involved in this decision for a robot who is trying to pass as a human, and she's like, it would be a good idea to get her to get a tattoo. And I was like, this was never going to be a good idea for a robot trying to pass as a human to get a tattoo. And then she went with it. And at that point, I was like, I'm not going to carry on reading this, because the only thing creating any drama in this is the stupidity of a robot trying to pass for a human going and getting a tattoo. And I'm like, this is never going to go right. Anyway, and that's when I stopped reading. So from now on, you talk about what you enjoyed about this book, because that's everything that
this
I have to
say. Now really, really hard.
What?
Because all you did was like taking it apart, saying, I only read half of it and that's it. And
But that's the thing. I think I read half of it.
What you refer there is actually, it's not actually that big. And
so, but nothing had happened so far. That was the thing.
That's not true.
I got to halfway through the book. And if that wasn't a big thing, literally nothing big had happened in half of the book yet, in her part of the story. And that's why I stopped reading, because if that wasn't going to be that interesting, nothing was interesting. And if it was going to be the main interesting, it was just an idiot plot. So that's why I stopped.
Okay. Well done.
No, now it's up to you.
I want to know what you think.
What?
What happens?
I'm not interested. There's nothing... It's one of those things that what I want to happen
want to happen?
Well, the thing is, I'm not sure if what I want to happen... Like, okay, Jane 2026's story. It would be amazing if she is taught by the ship AI. And, as soon as she escapes and meets them, it's like, okay, the obvious thing to do would for her to... Because she knows how to fix things. And I know she gets off the planet because she's in the other part of the thing. Yeah. I know she doesn't die. The dogs don't kill her. She's already a technical. I know that she's going to be a mechanic and a wizard mechanic later on. What would be amazing? I mean, the obvious thing to do is that the AI on the ship is going to teach her how to do it, and then she's going to fly away with the ship and is going to get back to civilization, and then that ship is going to go on. And then I'm thinking, just off the top of my head, Blue is also actually an AI body, and the owl's head, the owl's personality is in Blue. So that's one way that felt obvious for me. That's the obvious way that the story would go. Do you not know Blue? So owl isn't Blue later on in the story. No, you can't just shake your head.
Blue is a human.
So that was one way that would be the obvious way that the story would go for me.
Okay, this isn't obvious to me, but
no, but that's,
for me,
the way that I would
obvious.
Love it to go was that she would do this thing, and it turns out that the AI wasn't just telling her to fix all these different bits and pieces to get to fly the AI off of the planet. All it was doing was it understood that this little girl needed direction in life, but he didn't want her to go back across to the politically weird part. So he was just giving her tasks. It's like, oh, you need tasks? Well, I'm going to show you these AI adventures, and I'm going to bring you up. I knew the AI adventures were going to come in, because Pepper's already mentioned that the AI people in the other story.
Yeah.
So at the end of that story, they don't fly away in that ship. They are discovered by either whoever the people are on that planet, their thing, and they discover her, and they say, wow, this is really bad and wrong, and they kill the ship, but the ship makes her survive by giving her all the skills that she needs to escape, but the ship would never work. She would never actually repair the ship and get off under her own powers. And that, all of that story was just, that whole thing just happened for the AI knew that she, to survive, she needed this goal in life. And she was, of course, she's a 10-year-old girl. She's never going to be able to repair that ship. But the ship gave her a task which would let her grow up and develop as a person enough that she could make it in the wider world when she did finally get off the planet, when she was rescued in another way, let me put it that way.
Okay.
The obvious way was like that, and then the way that I would like is that there was actually a bit more depth to it, that it wasn't just like, oh, and then she repaired the ship and flew away and got to this planet and is now a mechanic. So again, I'm not sure which one of those is correct, or even if either of those are correct, but those are the things that could happen.
Okay.
Well,
because you didn't continue, but did you feel any connection between those two things? Like those two storylines? Did you feel any connection?
I kept thinking that there should be more connection there. That's the thing. Like, in a world where someone was a human, brought up almost as a robot who needed to look at circuits and was good at fixing things and stuff like that, and brought up by an AI, and she was learning to become a human, and the other one was a ship AI, also learning to become a human. But yeah. I was thinking, like, are these two things... Am I reading this into it, or are those two things... Are they more in... The, is it... is it being subtle, more subtle than it needs to be?
I think this is exactly how it's meant to be. And I think this is why she split up these two storylines and then makes them like always come in after the other and makes them shorter. And that's just not a spoiler for you, but these chapters get shorter and shorter towards like the when they join and
stuff. How can they get shorter than three pages?
Oh, come on. I actually sometimes in books, I actually sometimes read books that have like three or four storylines going on at the same time. And then I'm sometimes finding myself getting annoyed by being taken away from the story that I currently actually want to know or actually want to read. And then I go back to the slow story about and more like, oh, this is explanatory, and then in this book as well, this is just doesn't happen because it is so quick.
Yeah.
Because I know that, okay, now I have this chapter about the other character, and even if that doesn't have the same adventurous character at the moment, I know that it will quickly go back to the other one. I enjoy this.
Yeah.
Because it gives this whole thing more of a movie kind of character.
Yeah.
And so I did really enjoy that because I wasn't bored by like, oh, now I have to read about email or whatever, like communication. communication back and forth between people or whatever. So I quite enjoyed this. And I also still, again, enjoyed the variety of aliens that she came up with playing out.
Yeah.
And, I really enjoy communicating in colors and
the emotions, showing the emotions of it. That's the thing, like I liked that, and I had, and that's what some of the stuff that I liked in the first book, like the different alien species and how they interacted, and they went on this planet and met this kind of alien, and the ship and the crew was like, different aliens and stuff. In here I did like the idea of like, oh, these aliens communicate with emotions with color on the faces, so when they're at home they don't want any color around them because every color means something, and they don't want it. It would be like being in a home where people have loads of motivational posters on the walls, like like all the time are like strong messages and things like that, so they all have grey and beige walls. So
it totally makes sense.
It makes sense that if colours have hard-coded meanings to you.
It does. So anyway, as much as I enjoyed reading the story, I also had my thoughts about it, and especially with the story about the young Pepper was a bit okay. So there's this girl, and is that a spoiler when I say that she's escaping
the
factory? And then she's escaping that factory as being 4 years old or something?
No, 10 years old.
10 years old?
Yeah, she's 10 years old at the start of the book. Yeah.
Anyway, and so she can't go that far from it. And then she's just hanging out in the ship the whole time and doing jobs and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, why has she never gone back to where she came? That can't be far. She in all that time, and it's a time span of like 15 years or...
Oh,
like,
really?
18 years.
No, she... Oh, no, I thought she... she goes from age 10 to age 18, I thought you said before.
Yeah.
So it's like 8 years.
But there, in those 8 years, she never had the thought, if I ran here when I was 10... The factory that I escaped from is about somewhere here.
It's like 4 or 5 miles in that direction.
Why not check it out?
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, she was like, oh, and now I'm going to clean the spaceship so we can get the solar panels in. And I was like, no, but if you clean the spaceship, if the sun can hit it, it means it's not just, it doesn't look like junk anymore. If you're like cleaning up a spaceship, it doesn't, you know, it's going to be visible.
Yeah, but then the people obviously didn't care, because, I mean, the machines didn't even go outside when she escaped. So it's obvious that they didn't care.
But it felt like there was a lack of curiosity in both ways.
Yes, exactly. So that was what I was a bit unhappy about. I would have liked this to be going a bit more in depth. And then also, at some point, suddenly there were like a big chunk of years just skipped.
Yeah.
And like she was like 11 or 13, and
well, that's like I say, it felt like sometimes she would just skip back to a chapter, and too much time to pass. It was like, did you just not want to bother writing about anything that happened in there?
What happened? There must have bits and pieces must have happened, and in that one of those gaps, she could have gone back to the factory and try to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a bit of a a disappointment.
So you'll
for me.
You'll tell me when we stop recording if I what happens at the end of the story.
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so I thought it would be fun for you to come up with a way.
What I think this is going to happen.
It's quite interesting.
But I think in some ways sometimes I'll stop reading a book because I don't like the story and I don't like the characters and things like that, and just it's generally not a book for me. But sometimes I'll be like, I kind of want to know what happens, but this book is annoying me so much that what I'll do is then I'll go onto Wikipedia and read the Wikipedia entry.
I don't think this has
I'm
Wikipedia
just saying that
entry.
This is what I've done in the past. I kind of force myself to do that.
Yeah.
To remove any curiosity of what happens at the end.
Yeah.
You know, I did that with The Fall of Hyperion. After loving Hyperion so much, really into Hyperion, the second book was so bad that I was just like, okay, well, I want to see what this conspiracy was about. Like, what was the payoff? And I read it, and I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm glad I know that's what the backstory was, but I didn't want to read another 200 pages to get there.
Yeah.
In this book, I stopped reading it, and I didn't have any... And, I had those ideas of where I think the story would be going, like, where it could be going or whatever. But this is... But I stopped reading. I have no curiosity about any of these characters or what happens to them. You're like, what do you think happens? I was like... I guess this could happen. Like, I'll just say what I was guessing may or may not happen as I go through. But I only said what might happen to Jane 26, Pepper.
Mm.
The other characters just don't care. Like, as soon as she started looking at getting a tattoo, as soon as tattoos came up, I was like, if she gets a tattoo, this is going to be really, really... It's the most stupid thing that she could do, is try and get a tattoo as a robot trying to pass as a human. As an AI housing unit trying to pass as a human. I was like, that's going to be a really stupid thing. And it felt like a slow motion train crash, you know, like it was just coming in. It was going to hit that brick wall. It was going to hit the car on the level crossing. And I was just like, the person on the level crossing, just get out the, just get like, why just this is a massive problem. Just coming to you. And there was three people involved. And she was like, I'm going to get out too. Oh yeah, really? What's it? Oh, it's going to be a surprise. And the technician, the robot technician who controls the body, who knows all the manuals, who knew all that, didn't just say, hey, tell you what, why not? Don't get a tattoo. Like, if all of the things in your body is really great, it's got all these different ways of compassing humans, how about not getting an animated tattoo or any kind of tattoo? I mean, that's just asking for trouble. And she just went through with it. And she said, and then as she turned on her animated tattoo, she passed out and says, don't call the police, call Pepper. And then collapsed. And I was just like, I'm never going to go back to that next chapter. Like, I just, like, if this is the level of storytelling, I'm not going to go back. And that was it. And I just didn't care anything that happened to that character after that. I was just like, she is so stupid. And the characters that she's surrounding herself are so stupid. And this story, the only drama in this story is coming from a stupid character doing something. And all of the interesting stuff that I thought this was going to be about, which was like, the ancillary justice kind of ship, used to be a ship, have cameras everywhere. There was a few of these glimpses of good ideas about a ship-wide AI being reduced down into a human body. And then it was just like, and now she wants to be an artist or have art on her and stuff like that. And it was just like, this isn't the book that I was wanting. Like, there was way more good stuff of AI, ship bodies, all that stuff in The Long Trip to a Small Angry Planet. That, I mean, even though I gave that book, what, like two and a half stars or three, like, it wasn't a high rated book for me. I don't remember exactly what rating I gave there. It wasn't really high, but reading this, I was just like, oh man, the explorations and the science fictional ideas and that are like way, like levels and levels and levels above A Closed and Common Orbit. Are you going across here? Do you think it'll say? Is it going
to say anywhere?
No, well, I guess I could. I'm not
signed up.
Oh, you're not signed up.
The app crashed.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I never use the app.
I know, you never use the app.
Okay, so what's the previous... Oh, let me... I guess I could just look. I should have brought the episode lists page up. Anyway, so, overall... did you want to say anything more about Neuromancer, or was that something else? I don't even know.
Yeah, I wanted to
I gave the first book 3 stars.
Yeah,
about, I'd say 2.5-3 stars.
Yeah,
I have good memories of it, and this book was just it just felt so trivial and such a smaller story and all the ideas that I liked in that first book kind of just taken out with these characters which were kind of incidental in the first book, so incidental I didn't even remember it. I was just like, this book is just. It's not there. There aren't ideas here.
To just put it into a perspective a bit. So, of course, The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet has, like, almost 12,000 ratings. And it is quite high rated. It's 4.18.
My three-star didn't bring it down that
much. No, it was, like, on average. And then now, The Close and Common Orbit, which is just from... Oh, yeah, October, actually. October 2016. This has a rating of 4.43 by just about 2,000 people. But... the people who read it obviously quite enjoyed it.
Yes, because the people who read it were like, who read that first book and were like, oh, I want me some more of that.
Of course.
The people who didn't like the first book are like, well, I'm not going to give that author a second chance or whatever. The only reason I read this book was because you literally bought it and you were 20 pages into it. And I was like, oh, I'll download that as well from the iBook store.
Actually, you bought it.
Oh, I bought it. You use my
I'm your family. Yeah. I'm your family.
And it's on my credit card.
Your credit card. Anyway, I still enjoyed it, even though there were, I must admit, there were flaws and then worse things, but also it's just a fun adventure on all the different levels, and it ends in an adventure that wasn't quite as amazing, but I think it is a decent story for me anyway. And I really hope that she keeps writing and maybe gets maybe a bit more time with a better editor and writes out more of her ideas. I think that was a bit what this novel was like, had the problem. There were so many ideas, so many cool things that she could just write more about. And I think the editor maybe have just cut out things too much. I don't know. But she really could just play out more of the things that she had in mind.
There's this whole, you know, there's all these different writing things where you go, oh, show, don't tell. It's just like, you could have told a little bit more, you know.
Yeah.
Because in some cases, they're just like, oh, and she goes here. And suddenly there's like this really long, dense info dump about mating rituals or like some kind of fertility festival. I was like, oh, this is actually really quite good. And then that chapter was like 8 pages long because there was a few extra pages of this info. And then it just went back to these 3-page chapters again, which were just about like two people. And then they had a conversation about this. And you just read that conversation. It's like, and see you next time. And then switch back over to the other chapter. Oh, and also this was really noticeable as well. Because I'm also, the audiobook that I'm listening to is the follow-up to Oryx and Crake. What's it called?
Margaret Atwood.
Yeah, Margaret Atwood. And one of the characters in...
River Smoke.
No. It's the...
Rising Smoke.
The Flood. Year of the Flood. Year of the Flood. So no, I'm halfway through the book.
Nothing with smoke.
But Year of the Flood, that also has alternating chapters between an older, slightly older character and a younger version of that character. So like, I'm going to go back. So it goes back to when she was like 10 or 12 years old and a teenager. And I realized that they're both doing a similar writing trick, is when you write a book, even though you're writing the story of a younger person, like a 10-year-old, 12-year-old, is that you reduce your word choices. Like, even though it's written in third person, it's not like, I did this, I did that, but you write it as though, and this is what, the thing is, and Margaret Atwood could do that really well, that you just kind of, it's just a slight reduction down to a lower reading level of what you would be.
Less intellect.
Well, not even so much less intellect, because the characters can still be clever. They can still be...
No, I'm not saying like... I'm saying like the way that you can see how old a person is also by knowing how big their vocabulary is. So you put the vocabulary down to easier words and...
But what you need it to be is you need to just be signaling to the reader that you're using fewer words than normal, but also using enough to have a full expressive reading experience. Yeah. So it's like a signal. You're just making a signal to go, this is a younger person that you're reading now. Unfortunately, Becky Chambers didn't really understand. She doesn't understand what you're wanting to do is signal to the reader that's what's happening. She just uses like really, really basic child language. Like everything is, it's real this and it's real, real dangerous. Like not even really, really dangerous. It's real, real. Like it's using some, like it's so reduced and it's made worse. I mean, that wouldn't be so much of a problem, but it's made worse because this character, first, can't read. Second, doesn't have any words. She doesn't even know what a human is because they're just called, everyone in her, you know, in her dystopian future are just girls. And at one point she's like, oh, so I'm a human, a person, a girl and a child. And the AI is like, that's right. She's like, that's so confusing. Why do I need more words attached to me? And I was like, I'm dying for more words. I'm dying for you to have more than one word to say, oh, it's really, really fun, and it's really, really not fun. Oh, no, real, real not fun. Real, real fun. I'm real, real cold. I'm real, real hot, or just real hot, or, you know, I'm just like, oh, just a few extra, you know, just a few synonyms in here and things like that just to throw in. So, but it was interesting going backwards and forwards between one book, which was doing that really well. Margaret Atwood is, you know, just the writing is just way better. And then going to this one, I'm like, Becky Chambers obviously learned about this technique, or heard about this technique of writing a young person, and is just going all in on that. It's like, yeah, you don't need to be that blatant about it. So, and it was annoying because the story could be, even stories about children can be accessible to adults. You can read them as an adult and enjoy them. But when it's a story about a child written in child language and a child basic story with not enough complexity there, I'm just like, there is no stimulation for my brain, which is fine, to be honest, which is fine mostly in the first book, in the first Wayfarers book, you know, a long way to...
Yeah, but there was no child.
No, I'm not saying the child, but the more basic language wasn't a problem. Or, you know, like the not, it wasn't like you just reading Neuromancer or me reading Margaret Atwood and Year of the Flood. Like, there's like a level of language being used there, which isn't in sci-fi space adventure kind of thing. You know, like yesterday we watched, I don't know how we managed to do it, but you were like, oh, Firefly. And we just watched the first episode of Firefly again. It doesn't matter that that's not like, you know, oh, it's in space. So, but it's not aiming to be Interstellar or 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's aiming to be fun. Cowboys in space. And you're like, you know what? With cowboys in space, let's just go. I'm fine with this. Let's just go with it. And the long way to the angry planet, long way to a small angry planet, it was so much like Firefly. You're just like, look, I know who I am. We're in a, there's aliens around. They're going from planet to planet, having adventures away. It reads like Firefly. Like every episode, they go to a different planet and meet a new bad guy or meet a new set of friends or something like
that. Have to take things to
them. Yeah, and they've got to take that one to there, and they've got to move this thing to there, and some cows have to go from there. And you know, you're just comfortable in that area. Whereas in this book, Closed and Common Orbit, it's sort of like, yeah, there's this child doing something, growing up really slowly every other chapter. And the other one is a robot, which there could be some interesting science fiction stuff here, but it's not as good as Ancillary Justice, which the whole, you know, ship AI being put into a human body, like coming, like this book coming out now with the Ancillary Justice series, Ancillary Mercy. Just having read that this year as well, you're just like, you kind of got to step up your game a bit when you're, that is fresh in my mind, which was a good series, you know, overall I would say 3.5-4-star series, complete, like as you wrap it up, you're like, oh, okay, that's good fun science adventure with spaceship, used to be a spaceship and now is a human, and then you read this and I'm just like, I'm not going to finish this book, and you know what? I didn't finish this book.
Yeah.
Okay.
I get it.
Let's just wrap it up there because I don't want to go on too long. So there was something else you said. Oh, I want to ask you a question when we were eating dinner before. You said, oh, there's something I want to question you about.
Yeah, but that was the how you imagine.
Oh, okay. You know, so it wasn't a wider question. No. It was just like, what do you think happens?
You were thinking, oh, okay. is it a trap?
Yeah.
It's not a trap.
You're setting a trap for me.
Okay. Anyway, there was one thing that I have one note, right?
Yeah.
My one note is like, I've always... I'm not making that much notes. Yeah. It's just not my thing. Anyway, I was thinking, like, I always think, like, there's lots of things that if something is, people are discriminated, it's always immediately, this is racist. And racist is a certain, sometimes stands for something that is not really racist, but it is, like, it has the meaning of racism.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking for more words that describe these kind of discriminations. And... of course, when you're in a totally different world where there's like loads of other things that are actually races, there are different species.
Different aliens, yeah.
Different aliens. So every human is kind of, it's redundant. It doesn't matter if it's an Asian human or a black human, a white human, whatever.
Well, that's what this is, like the different groups of people who left. It's sort of like, oh yeah, it was actually the Africans who all left the world, left Earth. So all the people are like, oh yeah, they're of course everyone in the universe is like different shades of brown with frizzy hair and brown eyes, you know.
And so I was always thinking, how were they, and she just suggested a word that is used in here that was saying, that was vaguely speciesed. Speciesed?
Speciesed.
Like in racist.
Speciesed.
Yeah, speciesed. Is that, could you, like, if a human is discriminating against a horse?
Yeah, but you would, in weirdly, I mean, there could be, well, against a horse. I mean, you could say...
it's different species. Yeah.
Like, but it's like another version of xenophobic, in a way. You know, it's sort of like, but... speciesist, racist, you know, there's the are you an isto, is it a phobia, is it like a,
yeah, like it's like a, but the question is just the word doesn't seem to be like,
yeah, it's difficult,
yeah, isn't it?
We had this problem when we did the what was it, the Quantum Night book, and people were saying, what, this isn't racism, why do you keep calling it racism? It was like, there's no word, he's inventing, yeah, new ism, he's inventing new phobias, like we can't, yeah, call it intelligentsophobia, we can't call it homophobia, we can't call it like all these other phobias or phobias and isms and ists, like, yeah, racisms and isms and phobias. It's sort of like when you like he's inventing new ones and then encouraging other people to apply them to each other. And the only thing that we could, like, we were saying, okay, we know racism isn't the right word, but it feels like inventing a new form of racism.
Yeah.
And
because we don't have a word for it, it, yes, makes it so weird, because we want to express something as, like, strong.
Yeah, but as two European racist white people, it's like, then I feel bad about doing this because this isn't our experience. You know, this isn't our...
No, but it needs to have a word.
Maybe.
For me, I really want, like, yeah, anyway, that I like that one. And, yeah, overall... decent thing. Had my ups and downs with it, so I think for me it's like a 3-star book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for me, I didn't finish it, and it's really difficult for me to rate a book that I didn't finish. But like, it would have to be like a 1 or 1.5-star book for only getting just past halfway through or something like that. So we could average it out and call it a 2.5-star book again.
But in comparison, it's not like a doomsday book.
No. It's, I mean, doomsday book. The thing with Doomsday Book is that book made me angry,
yeah,
at how bad it was, but also it had a history of like winning the Hugo. It was like a Hugo Award winner. It was like won the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award, and it felt like it was like I should be finding something good in this, and it made me angry about how bad it was. This book made me almost completely indifferent to it.
Okay,
you know.
You just don't care.
No, I just don't care. I mean, it's just like, oh, it's just a book. I didn't finish it, but there's many books that I don't finish.
That's worse.
There's loads of books that I start and I get like a few chapters in, or, you know, whatever. I download it and go, oh, that's not a book for me. I'll just ask for my thing back. And there's actually some books which I've even finished and just never got around to reviewing. I read the first book in the Gunslinger series by Stephen King, which is a very beloved series. You know, it's like massive. It's like loads of books long, and it ties together all of Stephen King's stories. And there's going to be movies made of it or TV series made of it, and loads of people reading it. I literally read all the way. I listened to the audiobook. I listened to it, and at the end, I was like, I literally have no opinions of this book, and I never did a review of it. I thought, well, maybe if I read another one, I'll go back and review. Just never got around to reviewing it because I had nothing to say. It's like, this book didn't affect me positively or negatively. Just stuff happened. This person walked around, talked to some people. I don't remember anything about it, except at one point he sat by a fire and had a conversation. That's all I remember about the whole book. It just completely passed me by. And so many books do that so much that I just don't ever get into them. The only reason I'm talking about this is because you read it,
yeah,
and I read half of it. I thought, well, this will make, at least we've got something to talk about on the podcast. Whereas other books that I don't finish, I just don't even mention that I started, yeah, reading them, or they just sit there. Like, for example, I could just go over here and look in my, if I looked in my, you know, in my homepage on Goodreads, you look at my currently reading books, and there's like 8 books in there or something, of books that I just started, and I'm just like, oh, I guess I never got round to finishing that book.
I have one that is The Smoke Rose, what?
Her Smoke Rose Up Forever. Well, that's a series of short stories, so it's understandable you'll read one and then stop at one point and then just go, oh, I never picked it up. But look at here, see more. I think I've got like 8 books in my currently reading just because I kind of started. Maybe I took them out. Look, Diaspora by Greg Egan. I will finish that, but I read it before. But it was one of those books that you start reading and go, oh, I've read this before. And then I kind of like lose stuff. The Star Fraction, The Fall Revolution number 1 by Ken MacLeod. I started reading that. It was recommended to me. Got, you know, probably halfway into that, but stopped it. Emergence by Ray Hammond. Look at that, 20 pages. That's a weird one, because I started reading that. I was like, oh, this is... I ripped off loads of ideas of that in my Minding Tomorrow series, even to some of the stuff like that. Existence by David Brin. Started that. Just give it. Virtual Light by William Gibson. Saturn, The Grand Tour by Ben Bova. Like, there's like... how many books are there that just started and just went, 15%. Or 15 pages in, 20 pages in, and I just never got back to them. You know, they're just sitting there as audiobooks or ebooks or paper books, just hanging around. I will finish off Diaspora by Greg Egan, but we'll get through these.
Cool.
Some of them.
Anyway, I think in the end, this book has some cool things.
I thought we were going to talk for about 20 minutes on this, and we've gone to 53 minutes.
Oh,
should we wrap it up there?
Yeah, we didn't say anything about Happy New Year, people.
Well... in, yeah, but everybody goes back and starts looking. We've got like how many episodes? So people will be listening to this. There's just as many people are going to listen to this book next year.
But I still think we should have a happy new year. It doesn't matter when.
Happy news, 2017. We rolled around again. What are we up to? Episode 320.
What?
Episode, oh, like 323 or 22. We had a good Christmas.
Yeah. All very relaxed.
Very relaxed. New Year's.
Enjoyed new apartment.
Yes, it's pretty good. What did you got a coffee machine?
Oh, I love
for
it.
For Christmas, which was really good.
We
watched Toy Story. Thing, that was our marathon.
The best thing about the getting the coffee machine for Christmas is now that when Luke asks me if I want something, I can say, "Oh, will you make me a coffee?" And he can just press a button. It does some stuff. He puts the cup underneath, and then it just comes coffee, and it's all perfect. He doesn't need to do any screwing, putting together, putting on the oven, and whatever.
I remember watching there's at the beginning of a Bond movie. A Q has turned up with this machine, and Bond comes up and is like, "Oh, check this out!" And he makes a coffee and goes, "Coffee!" And it was like, and it was only like a minute later after watching that scene, I was like, "Oh, that was a new invention at the time." Yeah. I can't remember which movie it was, but it was like, "Oh, a coffee machine was the high tech thing." Yeah. Like in the modern movies. Well, Bond isn't so much about technology
but
anymore.
This is not just a coffee machine. This is like a.
It's a good one.
It was almost a robot. You could ask, is this
a robot or not?
Yeah,
I would say it's maybe, close.
Because it's not only doing coffee; it's also making the milk foam and the grinder.
And it cleans itself.
It's grinding the coffee.
Doesn't
fresh.
Empty itself. I got to empty the.
Well, you
got to
empty. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, there's one manual labor.
Okay, and what else happened? Yeah, like last year we did a series of movies over Christmas. We did the Mission Impossible marathon. This time we did Toy Story, which was a lot of fun. We did three Toy Story movies in 2 days. Number one, really great. Number three was amazing.
I watched Toy Story, and I remember it like being a good animation.
Money.
And then I watch it, and I think like, oh my god, this is all basic shapes.
It's like basic geometry.
So obvious, computer just like in my face. I didn't realize that.
But it works because it's honest to what it is. It's like we can do shiny plastic objects in computers.
Not hair so much.
No hair, so you don't see the hair. The dog is just flat. In the second movie, they think they can do hair. They think they can do dogs. They think they can do more tech. They can't really. In the third one, they can. It looks amazing.
Oh, the hair of the people.
Yeah, so Toy Story 3 is an amazing movie. Toy Story 1 was a great achievement and a historic achievement and still a really good movie. Number 2, not so much.
Yeah.
I didn't realize when you watched the extras that they wrote the whole story and pretty much produced the whole thing in 8 months. And I was like, oh yeah, I couldn't really tell. Yeah. It could have really done with like an extra 7 or 8 months of work just on the story alone. And but, you know, they can't all be classics. Two out of three of that series was a much much higher hit rate than the Mission Impossible marathon that we watched, which had like two really good ones, kind of okay one, and two, I wouldn't say stinkers, but you know, not great at all. So not too bad. Okay, let's stop before we get to an hour.
Okay, let's do it.
Less people will listen if it looks like it's an hour or more. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge. You can become both of our friends on Goodreads. You just follow us there. If you want us to read a book, stick a recommendation in the books. I would like to see reviewed thread and Goodreads, which is a good thing to do. You can email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got any questions. I do reply to everyone. There was a how to access the archive question that came through by email the other day. It'll take some things of sorting out feeds because you can't go back more than 150 episodes in the iTunes feed and things due to it breaking iTunes and breaking feed readers and breaking my website and stuff. But I'm going to get an archived feed sorted out. So if you've got any book that you're thinking, oh, has Luke ever reviewed this? I want to recommend it to. Go across to sfbrp.com, check out the episode list page. And there's a link.
Always
do
that first before you put it on the forum, because people will tell you, oh, he did it.
I did this episode. This, so you too can go to that page and sort by book title and command F. I'm thinking of actually doing, like, because this is the second book in a series, I'm actually thinking of making a column which says what series it's in,
part of it,
and maybe what number in the series, although some of them are a bit
weird numbering in Goodreads.
So I'll probably just take the Goodreads numbering.
Wayfarer's number 2.
If I just take the Goodreads numbering, that's it. So I might put some work into that in my next
on my next
cruise when I've got a bit of time and I'm in Antarctica or sailing across the Drake Passage or whatever. Anyway, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening and Happy New Year, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.